Welcome to Dithering on the Edge of Europe, the podcast about what it feels like to live in the UK and on the edge of Europe, the climate catastrophe, epidemics, pandemics, you name it.
I'm Rich McCarthy. I'm an ex-teacher. I'm an ex-energy auditor. And I'm a dad and a house husband.
And I'm Carola Böhm. I'm European. I'm a German. I'm a wife, mother, academic, and living here in the UK.
Well, I always wanted to change that a little bit because I'm European as well, but I forget to say anything about it. It's on your computer.
But you can say whatever you like.
Yeah, okay, but I only think about the European thing when you mention it, which is after me, so
you're just
that's why
envious
it never gets changed.
Because I will keep my European citizenship. Right, okay. So last time, of course, we did the first half of the Labour Party's Green New Deal, or we rather looked at the document which was called A Green Industrial Revolution, because that was part of their manifesto for the 2019 general election. And today we're going to do the last two parts of that. And I did want to just really start us off with quoting from actually the vision document. As we said last time, they have also a vision document, the Green New Deal vision for the Labour Party, mm-hmm. which is a very detailed, rich, evidence-rich kind of justification, environmentally, socially, politically.
Yeah.
And in there, they suggest that Labour for a Green New Deal envisions a prosperous, socialist, zero-carbon society as the alternative to our current world ridden with political, economic, and ecological crises. A Green New Deal will transform the economy through unprecedented investment in technology, infrastructure, and people. So, of course, the Labour Party, they, emphasizes the fact that climate change is also a class issue. And in that quote that I just read out, it also focuses on the socialist society. And I have to admit, I always have a bit of a issue with the word socialist, because I think, our world needs holistic, more organic solutions to problems. And of course, that's why we're in the Green Party and not in the Labour Party. And I don't know,
Have an issue? Workers' Party or something like that.
Or something like that, yeah.
Yeah, I see what you mean. It does mention socialist, and although socialist doesn't really strike, I don't associate myself with socialism or a socialist, but I have lots of socialistic ideas, if you like, and I think we've all got to live far more like socialists if we are to survive on a planet with 9 billion people. Our problem isn't that we aren't producing enough on the planet. We're producing far, far too much on the planet. So if we're having problems now, what we need to do is we need to learn how to share everything.
Hmm.
And us as a country really need to share far much better, because in the last 40 years, we've become far, far more divided between the rich and the poor.
Yeah, and I guess I would wonder, is that not just simply being kind to each other? Being kind to our neighbours, to our next region, to our neighbouring countries?
No, I don't think so. It's very easy to be kind to somebody. If you've got £2 million and the people next door are starving, it's easy to be kind to them. But the kindest thing would be to change the system so they don't need to feel, they haven't got to wait for you to come around and give them stuff, because they would earn enough money to have that stuff themselves.
Okay, nice. In terms of this left-right divide, I've never seen the Green Party. The Green Party could actually be covering quite a lot of bandwidth of the left-right divide. So you can't quite place them. It's much more organic. It's much more holistic kind of thinking.
Yeah, I think in a lot of ways the Green Party is more socialist than the Labour Party.
Oh, right.
In terms of policies, but in other ways we're much less. So in terms of producing the change in energy production, we see that's going to happen through market forces. There's no way the government can pay for everything all on its own, whereas the Labour Party is saying, no, we need to own the energy production, which is an admirable thing to do, but the trouble is you're not going to be able to afford to do it. So, right.
Okay. So we dealt with economy and energy as well as transport last time around. So we're starting off with environment this time around.
Yes. And what did you think of it in terms of environment?
We haven't gone through it yet.
Okay. All right. So if we look at the notes, first of all.
Yes. I mean, I think overall, of course, as we said before, you know, I'm missing the specifics sometimes, you know, so there are, you know, these fluff words like an ambitious plan for tree planting, for instance, or we will improve substantial areas of this, that and the other. And, you know, I'm missing the very specific numbers, the specific commitments, because this is in the manifesto. Now, we'll go through that and we'll probably pick up on that. But, you know, the Green Party's Green New Deal had those specifics in there. And you could tell that it's a very cohesive, very rigorously calculated strategy towards reaching zero net carbon by 2030.
Except it wasn't. It's saying we were on the way to net zero emissions. So, shall we go through what we've got in terms of the environment? First of all, Labour says that they will review and improve protected areas designations from national parks to local nature reserves and urban green spaces.
You know, when you read into, when you cross-reference, because there are also sections in various places in this document. So that's also what I think we've discussed, which upsets us a bit, you know. So here it mentions national parks and later it mentions national park and then it mentions tree planting attached to national parks.
Chopping and changing from one subject to another and then
but
that did do my head in.
That's not the policy, that's just a document. You know, and but so I assume
we would prefer a different writer.
Yes, exactly. Labour will announce plans to create 10 new national nature parks in its first term and plant 2 billion new trees by 2040 in order to tackle the climate and environment emergency. So they're putting the new national parks and the tree planting programme together. But that's from an article, a press release in November 2019. But let's just go through this document.
But just to say, those don't necessarily go together. They're not going to plant the trees in the national parks necessarily at all.
Yeah. There's a new climate and environment emergency bill that they set out.
Yeah. Okay.
For standards for decarbonization, nature recovery, you know, quality in the environment and species protection. And again, you know, it's I think that's the difficulty with this document, because environment is its own chapter. And you kind of think this is supposed to be the commitments towards a Green New Deal. An achievable Green New Deal. So why do you need a heading in environment? It's all about the environment.
Well, no, I would have thought the environment is bigger than the Green New Deal in a way. For me, it's why put the environment inside the Green New Deal, because it's a bigger thing. The Green New Deal should be part of their approach to the environment.
Because the Green Party had energy, housing, transport, economy, forestry and income. And I think all of those were recontextualized in an environmental sustainability kind of context. Whereas here we then have environment.
Yeah. So, okay, that's fine. So they said they're going to have their
climate and environment emergency bill, a new Clean Air Act.
Yeah. I had a plan for nature at the top of my notes on environment.
What is the plan for nature?
It just says legally binding targets for restoration of species and habitats, but then it doesn't say what it would be. It's just that they would create a plan for nature if they got into power, I suppose.
I assume that is the climate and environment emergency bill. Standards for decarbonisation, nature recovery.
No. This is a separate thing. This is a plan for nature, targets for restoration of species and habitat.
So you can see already we're confused. They are specific in terms of the vision of what they need to do. And of course, they've got also that other document, 30 by 2030 report. You know, so they've done a lot of footwork in relation to the justification and the calculations on the sort of baseline, then what the solutions are. But where I think it falls down is then translating that into specific commitments in the manifesto.
Yeah, well, you know, they got somebody else to tell them something for the 30 by 2030. And so they obviously haven't taken all of those up.
Mm.
You know, that's not them. That's a report that they got somebody else to write for them, to tell them what, to suggest to them things which would be good for getting as low emissions as possible by 2030.
Yeah, but even if you look at the vision document, there are loads of discussions about the numbers and the issues and the impact. And so there are, you know, there's evidence of a really rigorous process of thinking about it and working on it.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, it doesn't translate into specific targets, specific commitments.
Mm.
They suggest they will introduce a new Clean Act.
A Clean Air Act.
A new Clean Air right. Act. And of course, you know, the first Clean Air Act was devised in 1956 on the basis of the London Great Smog. And since then, we've had Clean Air Acts. But Labour is suggesting here to revisit that and produce a new one.
Yeah. And the idea is that it complies with WHO limits, World Health Organization limits for fine particles and nitrous oxides, which certainly I remember banging on about as a member of Friends of the Earth, I don't know, 20, 25 years ago. So, yes.
Yeah, and of course the whole issue with diesel comes in here, diesel vehicles and mm-hmm. stuff like that. And they also suggest that they will provide $5.6 billion in funding to improve the standard of flood defences, prioritising areas at risk, such as Yorkshire and East Midlands. So, of course, you know, we've had several more floods.
Yeah.
In the last few seasons.
Yeah, and that they say that they would fully fund the Environment Agency to improve upstream river management, whatever that means.
Yeah.
It's difficult to sort of say, it's easy to be cynical and say, well, they're just saying fully fund it, what does that mean? But then uncynically you say, well, they are trying to go for it, presumably.
And in the section of nature restoration, they also mentioned tree planting. In the manifesto, they actually don't specify how many trees they will plant. Now, in the Green Party's manifesto, it suggested
700 million.
700 million.
But that was wrong, as we...
Right. Why was that wrong?
The plan, the vision, if you like, the attempt to what the Green Party would do would be to plant 3,000 kilohectares or 3 million hectares of trees. And that would require probably about... from a little bit lower than 1,000 to over 1,000 trees per hectare. So that would be about 3 billion, right. As a kind of a minimum, would be around about 3 billion trees.
So they didn't use the standard of football pitch sizes?
No, they didn't either. Yeah, everybody can get it wrong, can't they? So.
Right, okay. So the Labour Party, in their manifesto,
the Labour Party didn't talk about football pitches in terms of trees.
Of trees, yes. So, but they didn't specify how many in the manifesto, but we did find a press release that suggested it was around 2 billion.
Mm. So that seems quite a large number of trees, which is good, certainly.
And national parks, 10 new national parks.
Yeah, and that's fine. I think that's quite nice.
But again, the manifesto doesn't say which ones, where.
No, but you dug up some places, some sites, didn't you?
Yeah, and there are several candidate sites. And they mention, in a press release, they mention several of them, but they only mention English ones. So Malvern Hills, Chiltern Hills, Lincolnshire Wolds. How do you pronounce that? Lincolnshire?
Wolds.
Lincolnshire Wolds. And North...
That didn't change at all. Wolds.
Wolds.
That's better.
And the North Pennines.
Yeah. Okay. And for me, the only place I've been on of those is the Malvern Hills, which are fabulous. And those would be great as a national park, I think.
Right. That's right, isn't it? They're all in England.
Yes.
That's right.
All of those that they've mentioned are in England. And I presume... England has, you know, definitely got the massive amount of the population of the UK, and it's probably got less open spaces than Scotland and Wales, Northern Ireland. So maybe there's a more of a thinking of a need for national parks in those places. But I'm sure there should be places in Wales and Scotland, Northern Ireland, which people who live there think ought to be national parks, probably. Mm. But I don't know where they'd be.
And then the sort of next subsection is about land. And they do have an interesting quote in their manifesto.
Mm-hmm.
Where it suggests that in 1979, 20% of the land was owned by the public sector. And today, that's only 10%.
Mm-hmm.
So we've lost quite a lot of common or public owned land.
Yeah, a lot of land got sold off along with electricity companies and water companies and things like that.
Well, it's again this wholesale of Britain. You know, as we turned into a service economy, we just lost any kind of assets.
Well, I think it's the government has been selling off the assets along with what needs to be done because it was sweetening the deal from their perspective.
So you give them the land.
But nobody wants to do that unless you give them a whole heap of land as well. The same thing, loads of land went with the railway companies.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just selling off land, giving it to private ownership. And we are, as you were saying last week, one of the countries in Europe with the least amount of public land at all in Europe.
Right. And they have this suggestion that they will invest in more county farms. Again, they don't mention how many more county farms, but I didn't know the concept.
No, me either. Although I guessed what they meant was that, well, what I guessed was what you checked up on and found it was, which was that each county basically has a certain amount of farmland that it can rent out to farmers, people who want to become farmers. Perhaps people who've never farmed before, maybe the children from farming families. But it's a great way of, because people who can't possibly buy land and they don't own land, so they rent some land from the county and farm it.
Yeah.
And if it works, then that's great. And maybe they can make a business plan and get to a point where they could buy their own land or whatever or something like that.
So
or they just carry on as a tenant farmer.
So these county farms would be owned by local authorities and...
Mm-hmm.
And can be let out to first-time farmers. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that's great.
Yep. Yes, I agree with that as well.
And then in the section of food, they also introduce something. I think that some of the other Green New Deals also include often this notion of a right to food. In this manifesto, it suggests we will end Food Bank Britain. We will ensure everyone has access to healthy, nutritious, sustainably produced food. And in order to do that, there would be a new National Food Commission. And they would also, in order to support that process, review allotments, the Allotments Act. So they turn, of course, their focus also onto food security.
And saying that would be a reason to intervene in the economy and work with local councils to minimize food waste.
Mm. And then, of course, this section also has some reference to fish stocks, setting maximum sustainable yields for shared fish stocks and redistribution of fish quotas along social environmental criteria. And then, of course, it mentions if we do leave the EU, which we have now left, it requires the majority of fish caught under a UK quota to be landed in UK ports.
Yeah, which seems perfectly fair enough. But then that seems to... So it sounds like they would sell some quotas to other people, which is what the Conservatives have done already, by the way. They have sold fish quotas to people already. To companies rather than saying other countries can use certain amounts of fish quotas.
Hmm.
It's good that they will have maximum sustainable yields. That's good. But it seems strange the redistributing fish quotas along social and environmental criteria. How on earth they're going to do that, I don't understand. But maybe they have some kind of complicated way of doing that. And Waste and Recycling says we will make producers responsible for the waste they create. That's good. In government in Wales, Labour has transformed the position of recycling, placing them in the top five globally for recycling rates. And really, we've seen recently that a huge amount of plastic now is blowing around in Turkey because we are shipping it to them saying this is recyclable plastic. And then they're saying, no, it's got plastic inside it that's not recyclable. And that sort of thing wouldn't happen if we recycled our own darn plastic ourselves, which is what we ought to be doing. It's our plastic. We should be the ones recycling it. If there are any air problems as a result of that, we suffer them, not somebody in a faraway country over the other side of the world. You know, that's a bit like we were talking last time about offsetting carbon emissions. And that's, we're offsetting our plastic problem to other countries.
So it mentions also three new recyclable steel plants.
Yeah, which we spoke about the last time, to recycle steel.
And again, you know, why is it in two places?
Yeah, well, I suppose if it's going to be a big thing, you can shout about it perhaps.
Several times, yeah. Right, and that was the section on environment.
Yeah.
And then the last section is actually quite a small one, which is animal welfare. And again, you know, it's a strange decision that they took animal welfare as a separate entity. You know, I just find the structure of this document quite confusing.
Yeah, maybe it was a document put together by somebody who was more interested in energy and CO2 emissions.
You know how these documents are being put together. It's not just one person. You know, there's a lot of thought. There's a lot of democratic processes of what goes in there, what commitments are going to be spelled out, so that this document doesn't have specific commitments. Could be also due to a democratic process of people saying we can't commit to this target.
I don't know too much about how this process works, but I do know, from what I know about it, I would say the process tends to be very, very secretive. So there are as few people involved in the process of actually writing the manifesto itself as possible, so that it doesn't spread out to other political parties who can jump on your ideas and use it themselves, or spill the beans about what you're saying before you actually release, and therefore take all the wind out of your sails. So it tends to be very difficult for the people writing the manifesto to get the full details on what they're writing from the people who are the nuts and bolts of getting all the information and putting it together.
Yeah, it's sad, isn't it? Because especially terrible, when you look at a Green New Deal, and maybe that was the reason for the Green Party to very openly to be one of the first to publish its manifesto. That's right. It was one of the first, wasn't it?
It was the first for the 2019 manifesto, I think.
Yeah, because in some ways, you know, it doesn't matter if other parties steal those policies. You know, in terms of a Green New Deal, yeah, go ahead, steal them all.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Right, so animal welfare.
Okay. So they would appoint an independent animal welfare commissioner. Tick. They would enshrine the principle of animal sentience in law to prevent practices that expose both wild and domestic animals to cruel and degrading treatment.
I think there was a whole discussion about animal sentience. So that would include lobsters and the boiling of lobsters.
Mm-hmm.
And I always imagine the poor lobster.
People say that you can hear a lobster scream when you put them in. And it's not actually true. I think it's the air escaping from the shell, which is what gives a sort of whistly, squealy noise. I worked in a lobster pool, lobster place. I wasn't the person doing that, but I was bussing tables when I was at uni.
Squid fall under this context as well. And I don't know why they mention specifically squid. Can you just say this word?
Cephalopods.
Cephalopods.
I think they would have mentioned squid, perhaps like octopi, which are very intelligent. They're clearly creatures who are very sort of interested, and they explore a lot, and they are quite clever in actual fact.
But this sentence seems to imply that lobsters and squids were not perceived to be animals, or did not fall under the definition of animals. Expand
decapod,
the definition of animals.
Decapod to, crustaceans.
If you octopi. Would ask me, is crab an animal?
I'd say yeah, yes, definitely.
Right, okay. There's something that we don't know here.
There is something we don't understand. There's lots of things we don't understand.
Right. And then there is, of course, the mentioning of
prohibit fox hunting.
Fox hunting.
Stop the cull of badgers. Uh-huh. So we would agree with that. And so did the Green Party.
Although we have a fox which catches our chicken regularly.
Yeah, but we wouldn't kill it, would we? We just know that we've got to get around to rebuilding the fence and making it something the fox can't get over.
Mm.
So especially because our chicken is going all scaredy cat on us and now walking along the houses on the main, not the main road, but it is a fairly main road.
And the banning of keeping of primates. And of course, you know, at the moment, there have been several documentaries which have been very popular, like The Lion King, where suddenly it has shown a light on exotic animals and the keeping of exotic animals. And here there's a suggestion that there will be a ban of keeping of primates as pets.
Yeah, gorillas, monkeys.
So not lions.
Not lions. I didn't know why you were talking about lions. Sorry.
Right. I feel that a Green New Deal should be not political. You know, we need to specify what we need to do in order to get it done, in order to make ourselves more sustainable. Forget about the politics. And I have a feeling this document still deals with politics.
Okay. It's not talking about nuts and bolts here, you mean. It's just trying to say, don't worry about that. We are thinking, bearing this in mind. We're bearing that in mind. We are bearing that in mind. Instead of saying, we're going to do this, we're going to do that, we're going to do the other thing.
You know, when we think about these four sections that it had, so economy and energy, yes. Transport, yes. Environment, strange one. Animal welfare?
Yeah, it doesn't seem to feature amongst a Green New, as part of a Green New Deal.
Yeah.
Certainly the Green Party would say we're going to have a lot less cows and sheep because they emit loads of methane, and the way that we farm them at the moment is intensively, which is not good for them anyway, and we have too many of them. So we're going to cut down on the number of sheep and cows, and we'd talk about it there, and we'd say, and also we're not going to have such intense farming because that's an animal welfare position. So that's how we'd look at it.
Yeah. So,
but other than that, I can't see how it comes into Green New Deal. Like international welfare, you know, whaling, that's not really an element of Green New Deal there. But okay, they thought that was the place to put it into their manifesto, perhaps. Perhaps that was it. They just couldn't think of anywhere else to put it. So they shoved it there because they'd already got environment there, and they thought environment because it's Green New Deal. So that's got something that's to do with the environment. So they put environment there. I don't know.
So maybe that's it. When they think about environment, they realize that people are thinking badgers, foxes, whales, national parks, trees.
Maybe.
And they tick off the biggest ticket items of what people think.
Yeah, even if that's got nothing to do with. Doesn't seem to be part of a Green New Deal.
But. So having looked at that now, what would you say were the best bits out of this Green New Deal, and what were the ones that you liked the least?
I think the best bits were they did have some sort of big things on wind turbines. That was very good. That gels with the Green Party's ambitions for wind turbines. With solar panels, far outstripped the Green Party's ideas of solar panels, although solar panels are only, they do best in the southern part of Britain, and obviously they don't work when it's dark and blah, blah, blah. But I'm sure there's ways that we can make them work to a certain extent. And we can probably use the power from solar panels to then create hydrogen at some times when you've got far too much energy, and that hydrogen can be used for cars and things like that, and also for processes in industry. So that's good. So they had a big thing on energy production. So that's very important, and that's good, and that's quite realistic. What I didn't like about it was they didn't seem to have a realistic way of paying for lots of things. So we had, the Green Party had estimated spending £100 billion a year, every year for 10 years, to achieve its aims. The Labour Party were estimating spending £400 billion over 10 years. So that's £40 billion a year. But that was, and they had bigger ideas of what they were going to do. They also say that they will insulate all of the 27 million properties by in 10 years. And we thought, well, we had talked to people in the industry, and they said there's no, we were stretching everything by saying we were going to manage to do 10 or 11 million homes. So for me, that seems to ring false. So I think there's a lack of realism in the paying for everything.
Right.
Area of the Labour Green New Deal. And the trouble with the Green New Deal is everything is very holistic. But there's also an element of you've got to leap into the dark, because you can't, we don't know how things are going to turn out. What we do need to do is say we are going to do our darndest to try and work it out, because if we don't, then we're lost completely, and we're lost a lot more quickly than if we do try. And yeah, we might owe loads of money to other people, but it's never stopped America. Sorry, you're looking at me like I ought to shut up now.
Gosh, best parts, I do like the whole commitment to bringing public services back into public ownership. That's probably my biggest plus. But I don't like this document as much. I love the Green New Deal for Labour document, mm-hmm. that vision document with all the rich evidence and the links and the justifications.
Yeah, fantastic.
And I do like their 30 by 2030 report, which was commissioned by the Labour Party and written by experts identifying specific solutions. And again, a very extensive document that finds different, you know, that discusses different solutions now to move forward.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the weakest is actually the manifesto, because yeah. it actually didn't specify specific commitments or specific targeted commitments that came out of both the vision and the 30 by 2030 report. So it's almost like there is a missing link on how to go from the vision and the justification to solutions. And they have all the evidence there with these two documents, and it's not in the manifesto. Now, we should actually say that since then, of course, as part of the Green New Deal thinking, they've devised a COVID-19 post-pandemic strategy of how to move into a green recovery. And that's maybe something that we might want to look at. But certainly in terms of the 2019 manifesto, which is at the moment the commitments by the Labour Party,
mm-hmm.
it falls short on having specific detail.
And I would say that, again, the reason is money. So they don't know. I think they had to come down from the aspirations of the 30 by 2030 because that the 30 by 2030 didn't mention funding. You know, bringing that together, I don't know what they've said on how they will pay for things in general. It would be in other parts of the manifesto, I presume. Okay. But I think they ought to be linked because you can't, you know, you need to be able to say how you're going to pay for stuff to a certain extent.
So we didn't actually get a sense of how we would pay for the commitments set out
by the Labour Party, or how the Labour Party thinks we would be able to pay, the country would be able to pay for things.
So certainly in the documents that we read that were particular to the Green Industrial Revolution, it didn't set that out as far as I remember.
No. But they did say that they would have 400 billion over 10 years.
Mm.
But then for me, 400 billion is not very much for Green New Deal. Mm. So.
Right. Okay. So there are more questions, it seems, than answers. There are sort of quite a few holes that might be to do with the structure of the document. It might be to do with the logic of the sequence of documents, but also where this document sits within the larger manifesto of the Labour Party.
And it has, to be honest, it's made me want to read it more in a way to find out all the rest of the stuff and what they've said. But it's just having the time to do it.
Yeah. But we're not going to read more because we will move on next time to
the European Green New Deal.
And we'll see how many holes that one has.
Yeah. So we leave it at that. And if you enjoyed the show, please tell somebody else about it. And if you like, let us know. That would be fabulous.
We're on all the main podcast services, and we're also on Twitter. So you can find us on @DitheringE, or just look for Dithering on the Edge.
And it's goodbye for me.
And have a fabulous week.
Yes.
Bye.